United States v. Redmond and Avery. Ms. Kister.
May it please the Court, good morning. I'll make my remarks brief. As this Court is aware, at the time Mr. Redmond was sentenced in this case as a career offender for the distribution of crack cocaine, Welton was the rule in this circuit. And I think we have to assume that at that time, at the time of sentencing, as Judge Easterbrook suggested in his April 28th order, Judge Young was implementing and invoking Welton. It was the rule in this circuit, and although the winds were blowing possibly at that point in the direction of Corner obviously was not yet the rule. Judge Young didn't have a crystal ball. He invoked Welton, and the question becomes, given that Corner was subsequently decided, and because this case is still on or now on direct review, and because we cannot tell from the record itself whether Judge Young might have departed even further than he did in this case in light of Corner, and also because due process is clearly implicated if a sentencing court misapprehends the scope of his discretion at sentencing, I think this Court has no choice but to send the case back on a limited remand to the district court to determine whether.
But has Judge Young ever suggested any desire to impose his own penal theories in conflict with that of the sentencing commission?
Well, and that's my point, Judge.
No, he hasn't.
But he can now.
Departure. He seemed to think this was an appropriate sentence, right?
But I think you can also read the record to suggest that he was laboring under the weight of Welton. Clearly, Welton was the rule, but
I don't see that. I don't see any weight under Welton.
I see it implicit in his responses to Mr. Redmond. In each instance, and there were two or three, where Mr. Redmond was effectively pleading with the court to come down from the 20-year sentence, says, Judge, can't you go lower? This is effectively a life sentence for me. Does it have to be 20 years? In each instance, Judge Young replies, well, but you're a career offender, which in my mind suggests that he feels constrained by that fact, constrained by 4B1, perhaps even constrained by Section 994, although he doesn't specifically invoke that. He may well have believed, and he should have at the time, that he had no choice but to implement.
Now, where did he say that?
Page 45. There were a couple of places. It comes very late. Yes, thank you, Judge. It's on page 45 of the sentencing transcript. When Mr. Redmond says, there's no way I can be able to come down on 20 years, and the court says, no, the court has deviated from the guidelines. The court's already come down on your sentence. And then Redmond persists in his plea, and the judge says, you're a career offender. That's a serious thing.
Where is that?
That is on page 49, Your Honor, towards the top. It says, well, I understand all that, and I've explained my reasons for the sentence. I don't think I need to go back over it. But the guidelines categorized you as a career offender. And I think implicit in that is
You're leaving out what the judge said next. He says that's pretty serious. He's certainly entitled to give weight to the career guidelines. It's pretty serious.
Yes, and he should.
Exactly,
and he should.
How serious he thought it was. He didn't think it was quite as serious as his criminal history suggested, and that's why he gave him the discount. You really think he's going to give a different sentence on remand?
He gave a discount, Your Honor, I believe, because although Mr. Redmond was technically a career offender, he did have priors for substance offenses and one for robbery. They were old. The robbery was...
The judge was willing to bend the career offender guideline. What makes you think he'd bend it further?
Well, by virtue of the
portions of
the record
that I've... What would you say? I've decided to adopt my own theory of criminal punishment? That doesn't sound like Judge Young.
I think because it's ambiguous, and I believe it is, and we can't foreclose the possibility that Judge Young may yet have gone lower than the 20 years. I think there's no harm in determining that directly from him on a limited remand.
I mean, he gave Avery 262 months, and Avery had just sold 1 gram, right?
That's correct.
And Redmond had sold 3 kilograms.
That's correct. And you may well be correct that this was the only discount he was going to get and will yet get. But I think given that due process is indeed implicated, and in light of Korner, and because that's a subject matter. It affects career offender guidelines now. There is broader discretion. I don't think we can foreclose that possibility here.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kiss.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Butler?
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Elizabeth Butler, and I'm the court-appointed attorney for Charles Avery. I would like to focus on the issue of the district court's denial of Mr. Avery's request to withdraw his guilty plea. The underlying rule is that a defendant knowingly, voluntarily enters a guilty plea, and in this case, Mr. Avery entered a guilty plea for circumstances which were not what he was eventually sentenced with. There's a huge disparity as to what the facts underlying the counts which were related to him in the July 2010 hearing and then the facts that the judge considered in sentencing in December. Specifically, a trial stipulation was entered as to the amount of the two controlled buys, and that equaled less than a gram of cocaine-based substance. The testimony that was elicited by the detective stated that there were two controlled buys within 2 weeks amounting to a cocaine substance that was less than a gram. At one point, the district court asked the government, so in counts 5 and 7, the two buys, are you saying that you're limiting the amount to less than a gram? And the government says, roughly, yes, Your Honor. The government then goes on to say, but we don't have a stipulated plea agreement. But there's all the indication there was that it was limited to the two controlled buys within 2 weeks, amounting to less than a gram of drug. Further on, when the detective was further elicited information about a conspiracy, and the conspiracy occurring from March to August, and Mr. Avery was arrested in the beginning of March, Mr. Avery then addresses the court and says, Your Honor, I believe that you're talking about a conspiracy. My understanding was the conspiracy count was dismissed. Am I being charged with a conspiracy? Both the government and the court said, no, this is putting it into context. And so it is reasonable for Mr. Avery to have believed that he was pleading guilty to, again, two counts within 2 weeks of less than a gram. And when in the November hearing, he first hears of the PSR report, or his first opportunity to discuss that with the court, he asks to withdraw his plea. He says, where does the 6 grams come from? I don't know this. So I didn't plead to this. And the government says, and it really is based on speculation, well, there was money that was found during the arrest, and we sort of surmise or calculate that that money amounted to basically 5 grams of crack cocaine, and therefore that's, it appears from the record that he was talking to the probation officer, and the probation officer then put the 6 grams in.
If that, I could, counsel, cut to the chase here.
Sure.
I think there are real problems with the drug quantity issue here, but that's not what drove this sentence. The career offender guideline did. That put him in a 34 offense level, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And that was not going to change one way or the other. And he was warned about that before he pleaded guilty. And so to the extent that there was surprise and mishandling about the of the drug quantity here, that doesn't make any difference because he was going to be a 34 based on the career offender guideline anyway. Isn't that the case?
Well I would, to that I would respond that the judge had discretion in sentencing him.
But not in calculating the original range. And so to the extent that his plea withdrawal was based on surprise and how the range came out, doesn't matter because it was going to be that way regardless of whether he was sandbagged on the drug quantity or not.
And to that, I would, though, present that the Mr. Avery that came before the court having had or being sentenced on 50-plus grams of crack cocaine presents a much different character, presents a much different threat to the community than a Mr. Avery that is sentenced on 2 buys amounting to less than a gram of cocaine. And I believe that that influenced the district court's sentencing. And based on while offender guidelines did apply, that there was some discretion and that the court, given the prejudice or the bias that would arise out of seeing the defendant as being someone involved in a 18-month conspiracy, basically, as opposed to a 2-week drug sale, affected the sentencing.
He thought he would be a more attractive candidate for leniency, I take it, is your argument?
Well, I think so. I believe yes, because I think the idea of entering into a plea is that you reduce the risk. You don't gamble and go to trial. You reduce the risk. And in this case, he believed that he was reducing the risk by entering into a plea agreement as to which he believed was limited in time and amount. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Butler. Ms. Brookman?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Matt Brookman. I'm an assistant United States attorney. I represent the government in this case. And I would like to take up Mr. Avery's argument first, if I could. Counsel said, I think misspoke and said that he pled pursuant to a plea agreement. Avery did not. He pled open on the day of trial. He had no agreement with respect to what his guidelines would be. He certainly had a constitutional right to know what he was pleading guilty to, what the statutory crime was, what that range of punishment was, and that everything was knowing and voluntary. But he had no right or expectation to know what his guidelines range would come out. In his disagreement with that range, after he had pled guilty and when he saw his pre-sentence report, did not provide any fair or just reason to let him out of his guilty plea. It's interesting, with the three things that Avery brought up that he disagreed with in this pre-sentence report was that, one, whether or not he was a career offender, and there's really, at this stage, there's really no reasonable discussion about whether or not he was a career offender. Clearly he was. The second thing was his acceptance of responsibility, and of course he pled on the day of trial. And Judge Young, during the plea colloquy, advised him that he had pled on the day of trial and therefore that he might not get acceptance. There was also indications from defense counsel backing up with respect to career offender that he had discussed that with his client. Defense counsel had discussed that with Mr. Avery, that was an option well before the plea. So Mr. Avery knew that was certainly could be coming. And the last thing was the drug weight. There were no agreements with Avery about what his ultimate guideline offense level would be beforehand. The government stated that repeatedly. Judge Young stated to Avery repeatedly and in particular said, look, and I'm paraphrasing, but look, I'm the ultimate decider of the guidelines. And you may not, if you disagree with those guidelines, if you think there's a different guideline should apply, but if I disagree with you, that's not going to be a reason that you can withdraw your guilty plea. Do you understand that? Defendant says, yes, I understand that. So he certainly went in with his eyes wide open. That he disagreed with the ultimate guideline calculation was not a basis to withdraw his guilty plea. And ultimately, Your Honor, as you mentioned, ultimately the drug level did not matter because, of course, he was a career offender and his guidelines were driven by the career offender 4B1.1. With the rest of my time, I'd like to turn to Mr. Redmond's argument. And what I would point out with regard to Mr. Redmond is that this would be an entirely different case to this court if he had been sentenced within this guideline range, or if he'd been sentenced at the low end of the guideline range, would probably be even more of an indication that perhaps Judge Young felt somehow constrained by the guidelines here. He did not. He got a sentence below the guidelines. The court varied from the guidelines. I respectfully disagree with counsel that I don't read anything in the sentencing transcript that would suggest that Judge Young somehow felt constrained by the guidelines or constrained by the career offender status here. The only thing we know for certain is that he was not constrained by it because he sentenced him below that. There was no reference in the sentencing transcript, there's no reference at sentencing that the court was troubled by the crack to powder ratio disparity. The only reference to drug weight at all was the court indicating that the defendant had trafficked in significant amounts of crack cocaine. I don't read anything in it that would lead us to believe in any way that Judge Young's sentence would be different if the case were remanded. The court went through a long list of factors that it thought were important: criminal history, the involvement in violence, his long time as a drug dealer and as a gang member, his lack of remorse, and then also in his favor, his difficult upbringing, and referenced all those things. And ultimately, the court came up with a sentence that, based under 18 U.S.C. 3553, it felt was a fair and reasonable sentence and the sentence that should be imposed.
I think the distinction here is not that the judge misunderstood his Booker discretion, sort of speaking globally. He obviously did not, because he came in under the guidelines range, but that inquiry focuses on whether the judge understood that he could disagree with the range for discretionary reasons under 3553A. The more focused question is whether he understood that he could disagree with the reason for the guideline that was producing the range, which is to say the career offender guideline. And the transcript doesn't say anything one way or another about that, and that's what we have to figure out here to decide whether relief is warranted. And in that situation, typically we do issue the limited remand for the judge to tell us rather than making assumptions from a silent transcript.
The only difference here, Judge, I would say, is that the judge did go below the guideline range.
We've got a lot of case law that says that, when judges vary downward or upward from the guidelines range, they're doing it by reference to the range. And if they understood that, there was discretion to disagree with the reasons for the range, which is to say with the guideline itself, then, maybe that would have made a difference. We don't know.
And I understand the argument. And if there were anything at sentencing that suggested that the judge somehow might go below the range because of the crack powder disparity.
What would his statutory minimum sentence be?
I'm sorry?
What would Redmond's statutory minimum sentence be?
Redmond's statutory range of punishments was 10 years to life in prison.
10 years. So he could have gone down. The judge could, in principle, have gone down to 10 years.
With respect to Redmond, with respect to Avery, the sentencing range was 0 to 30 years, Your Honor.
Yeah, but Avery was sentenced post-Corner.
Yes, and then my last point was that Avery's Corner argument really is the United States versus Newbern forecloses any argument on Corner with respect to Avery on the career offender issue. I don't have anything further. If there are any other questions.
You're saying Corner could not have been applied to Avery's sentence?
Corner could not be applied to Avery's sentence because, Your Honor, whether he was sentenced for crack or powder, his guideline, his career offender guideline would have come out the same. He had a 0 to 30-year range, so his guideline would have been a level 34, regardless of whether it was crack or powder. And the United States versus Newbern addressed that exact issue. So it's on all fours on that, all square. I don't have anything further. If there are any other questions, thank you.
So, Mr. and Ms. Butler, you were both appointed, were you not?
Yes.
And we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.
Have to move on.